a good deal. You do it once and it pays you forever once it's done properly.
Welcome to the RAND CRE Show. Commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
Hey everyone, welcome to the RAND CRE Show. I'm your host, Mike Taravello, with the man, the myth, the legend, Will Coleman. Will, how's it going today?
Howdy, Mike. Just running the marathon one step at a time and very excited to learn from probably my favorite guest so far. to tell the big, quick backstory on Hadar, I met him when I was doing a podcast in, I think, 2016, 2017. And he introduced me to Wheelbarrow Profits and to Josh Rusin and kept telling me to reach out. And so I am here, no doubt, because of you, Hadar. So I'm very grateful for that. So quickly jumping into Hadar's story, he's got nearly two decades of full-time real estate experience. Hadar specializes in long distance, even out of the country investing, and is an asset manager with his company, MHI Holdings. Over the years, Hadar implemented different strategies, which include wholesaling, house flipping, subdivision, new construction, commercial real estate, joint ventures, and multifamily investing with a focus on value add properties. Hadar, how's it going?
Very good, very good. Very thankful and grateful to be on the show. It's great to be with you guys, Mike and Will. Thank you.
Yeah, excited to have you on. I know, like I said, Will, we've been itching to get you on the show, but you had a monster refinance coming your way. But one thing I want to, you know, with Will saying out of the country investment, I think it's important to showcase where you are in the world, Hadar, because I think that's what's truly remarkable about your story is you're doing real estate all around the world.
Yes, that's true. So I am an American citizen. I was born and raised in Israel, but my mother is American. So she was born in Chicago. She met my dad on a summer camp, you know, nearly, I think, more than 60 years ago now. And at some point, they moved to Israel. So I was born and raised in Israel. And in the early 2000s, my girlfriend back then and I went to travel in New Zealand. So we visited New Zealand. My now wife has a sister in New Zealand. And we liked the place and decided to immigrate because Israel was a little bit on a turmoil back in the early 2000s. And we thought that New Zealand would be a nice place to bring up family. Fast forward nearly 20 years, you know, it's one of the most desirable places to live in the world because it's a safe haven with no COVID and a lot of green fields and space and, you know, reasonably stable economy.
Yeah, my girlfriend backpacked through New Zealand 2-3 years ago for an entire month and showed me photos on her not great phone at the time, and they were truly breathtaking. So it's been cool. I mean, can't say anything bad about New Zealand. I can't wait to visit and see all of Hadar's projects when we're allowed to travel again.
Absolutely, welcome. I'll do a tour with you. I'll show you around. It's a great place. It's a beautiful place, you know. But the thing is, I think America and even Canada and many parts of the world are beautiful too. But the thing with New Zealand is that when you get to New Zealand, there is a lot of open spaces and they last forever. You know, and the atmosphere is different. People are very, very relaxed, very accepting, and it's kind of a different energy. And that's what people feel when they come here. You know, there's beautiful places in America that are breathtaking as well in the nature. When you go hiking, when you go, you know, if you go out to the outdoors. So, but certainly a beautiful place to live.
Yeah. Anytime I see pictures of you hiking or outside with your kids, it's like it looks like a painting. Like it's just beautiful.
Yes, there are two main things in New Zealand which are cultural. One of them is rugby. The second of them is being outdoor and doing outdoor sports, if you like, activities. And it's really ingrained into the kids and people in an early age here. It's part of the school, very encouraged. So, yeah, we are pretty happy here. Thank you.
So let's jump into it because I think a question I get all the time, and I'm sure you get all the time as well, is how can you buy out of state, right? There's so many hurdles, or even out of country. There's so many hurdles in terms of lending, boots on the ground, due diligence. I mean,
mindset.
How do you start if you know someone's in New York or in California and they want to invest in a more investment favorable market?
Yes. So the first thing to do is to really surround yourself with like-minded people. You know, I think that the one of the thing that really kept me going when it was tough, when I was really trying to get educated and really find my feet, get my feet wet, if you like, while shifting my focus from New Zealand to the United States, was really the Jake and Gino community. So, you know, it's something that I felt that it was support, if you like, environment to help you out, not just with the education, but when things taking a bit longer to happen. And, you know, when you kind of need to perhaps deviate and change your course in terms of what you're looking for, it, I had a support team to help me. So I remember I met with Gino back in St. Augustine in 2017. And since then I was, you know, one of the first clients of Jake and Gino. And since then, you know, we've gone through a lot. I got my feet wet first with just buying a fourplex. I wanted to, we're not going to touch about, if you want me, I could briefly, but after I already chosen the market, I really wanted to get my feet wet through a smaller project to make sure that my third party property management and my boots on the ground and the contractors that I got referrals to will do the job properly before I go and I scale the business up to buying larger apartments building. I wanted to make sure that I have a proof of concept, if you like, that I can make it happen in that particular market. So apart from surrounding myself with a great network of like-minded people, because real estate could be quite a lonely business when you're doing it, when you're really motivated and you have a very strong why behind you. So you got the fire inside you to be successful. It's very important to surround yourself with people that have the same feeling towards it, because otherwise there could be other influences, whether friends and family that are not in the same mental position and they don't have the drive to achieve financial independence and live a lifestyle by design. And that could actually hinder and put the fire down a little bit in times of difficulty. So it's very important to surround yourself with like-minded people. But going back to the process, I chosen a market, I got my feet wet, I started doing smaller projects, and I got a proof of concept that the team on the ground that I built through mainly referrals are able to execute. So really, referrals is the number one key for getting your property manager, to getting lenders, even to being introduced directly to lenders. And also you want to get to know local investors, so you can perhaps attend local RIAs and local meetups that surround yourself with like-minded people and get to know the good players in your marketplace. Once you become an area expert and you really dig deep to get to know your market properly, you actually get to the point that you know which investors own a few hundred units in that market or in that sub-market, or which investors perhaps are looking to offload some properties. And this is very, very, very important to have this relationship. One of the key elements and key tools that you can use is bigger pockets. I started with bigger pockets, and I actually reached out to people within the market that I chosen, and I actually made time to meet with them, took them for lunch, formed the relationship. And now we became really good friends. I've been working in this market for nearly, you know, 3.5 years now. And every time I visit, some of them has become a very good friend of mine. We do some other things together, and we're looking to invest together. And I even stay with them, and, you know, very good friends. But in some of them, every time we meet, we go for lunch or dinner, and it's just great friendship. So it's very important to really be prepared to make friendships, grow your network, and be willing to visit the market regularly. If you want to invest out of the area, you cannot do it by just looking online and not being prepared to submit offers. I had a chat with a few members of the community, and they always ask me, how do I make it? I tell them, you cannot expect to build a relationship with brokers and lenders by not putting a face to the name. It's really, really important to come and be willing to visit the market first, meet with them, and build those relationships, and then be prepared to visit. If you're in the United States, there is no reason that you will not visit the market at least every 2 months in the beginning. At least. Otherwise, it, like Gino says, you have to be present to be successful. You want to be present. You want to get known. They want to know that you are taking it seriously. Very important.
Yeah, when I did a refinance on a deal in Texas, and the borrowers lived in South Africa. One of them lived in South Africa. And that was one of the questions from Freddie Mac was, how often do the borrowers visit the property? And my answer was once a quarter. And Freddie Mac was like, I was thinking that was a good answer, right? And Freddie Mac was like, that's not quite enough. Like, we'd like to see generally more. So visiting once every 2 months, especially in the beginning, is a very good amount of time to visit. And kind of tailored to that, with lending, how are you able to get a bank to give you a loan on that quadplex? I mean, obviously most banks want the lender to, or the borrower to be in the same state. With you out of the country, this is one of the biggest questions I get, because investors are looking in different markets. How are you able to get a bank to consider giving you a loan with you being out of the country?
So the first loan that I got for the quadplex or the triplex that I bought after that, which were really good deals, I basically buried it, but you know, we don't have to get the details of that. It actually went with the conventional loan route. So I got conventional loan, 30 years fixed, 30 years interest rate, and I used the mortgage broker for that. So that was easy. They had the process. As an American citizen, I had to go and get some of the document notarized and certified by back then the U.S. High Commission in General Consulate in New Zealand. And now actually the change, it needs to go to the Internal Affairs Department in New Zealand, but document needs to be certified to happen when you do conventional lending transactions. But when I went and bought my deal in, for example, my 45 units, which I just refinanced that I bought last year, I actually, like you say, I had a great deal on my hands. It was 45 units that was, from just memory now, I think it was about 20% vacant, but there was another 10% economic vacancy. So in effect, we were at 30% economic vacancy, if you like.
A textbook deal, nice and easy.
Yeah, textbook deal. And on top of that, the rent were about 35% below market. So the two bedroom units with washer and dryer hookups, and the tenant pays all utilities, they were $450 per month. By market rent, it's about $600, $625. So I knew it's a screaming deal. I knew I worked on it for 18 months. And if you want to hear more about this particular story, you need to go to the Movers and Shaker podcast number 126. I cover it. So I had the established relationship with three banks that were really keen to fund the deal. One of them I already had a bank account with, because they are kind of more of a regional bank. It's Centennial Bank. I connected you, I think, with Tyler, my banker over there. Great guy. So I established a relationship with them. And then I had another two banks who took me for lunch. And one of them even went for lunch with me and brought the vice president. And, you know, they paid for it all. And my buddy Cole came and they paid for him as well. And they were looking to expand into that submarket, which is only, you know, 15, 20 minutes up the road from Little Rock. And they were really keen to fund the deal. They said, we're definitely going to fund it for you. So I had three options. And when the rubber meet the road was the crunch time, when we really wanted to get the ball rolling and close on the deal. So two of those banks went to committee. And because the committee had about 14 people, in that bank that took me for lunch and did a big row, how much they're going to, you know, want to walk with me, the committee couldn't make a decision to actually facilitate the transaction, because Hadar Orkibi from New Zealand, although a U.S. citizen, like you said, you know, it just doesn't fit their criteria, the risk profile. They wanted somebody local. They wanted somebody that has a track record to stabilize those assets with such a heavy value out of the front end. So they didn't basically, two of them didn't give me the funding. The one that came to the table was the one that I had a pre-existing relationship with, the one that when I started investing in Arkansas, I needed an account to be able to collect the rent. So I had to open a bank account. So I opened a bank account with the Centennial Bank, which is a regional bank. They have branches in Florida, in Arkansas, in Alabama, and in New York. They are licensed in those states. So long story short, I opened a bank account with a secure credit card as well. Like I put $1,000 down and they gave me a credit card for like $500 and worth of credit. And I just spent, you know, $20 a month or something just to kind of build a bit of track record, like something like the online version of the local business newsletter, if you like, newspaper, which is very good. And I highly recommend it if you're looking to invest in a different market, subscribe to that. So you learn what's going on in the market. You learn who are the movers and shakers. You learn which banks are doing deals, what properties in real estate are selling. There's a lot of information about gentrification, about new businesses moving to town. It's very, very important. So it's highly recommended. You keep the finger on the pulse by doing that. And that bank funded the deal. So the terms wasn't that great. It was 20-year amortization. It was 5.5 interest rate. It was last year. And they did give me a 1-year interest only and a good construction loan to cost. So basically, they lent me 75% to cost, which was good. So I gone through the process. I stabilized the asset. And it owed me with the construction loan about 1.4 million all in. And 12 months down the track, because within the 12 months, I closed on the deal. I was there for closing. It stretched and stretched and stretched. There was problem with the sellers. There were three owners who one of them wasn't able to sign document, was incapable. So that everything stretched and I keep extending my stay, you know, and luckily my family was very supportive in saying, just do it, make it happen. You know, you're already there. So, and then I came after 2 months, I came up again to grab the bull by the horn, as we say, and oversee the repositioning and the management and really, really go and make sure that everything is executed correctly. And I've done that. I asset manage, my role is asset management within my company. And, basically, we stabilized the asset within 12 months, and it appraised now at 2.45 million. So we built $1 million worth of equity within 12 months through hard work, and most importantly, goes together with hard work, is buy right. We bought it right. We bought it really, really well. I wanted to, you know, Will, we had a talk about refinancing the property with Rand Capital. And at that point, we made the decision that perhaps we need to wait for 2 years of ownership so I can have the maximum leverage, the maximum cash out refi, which is not 2 years yet. I'm only 1 year into the project. So what I did is I went to a Federal Credit Union, who I built relationship with. Then, by the way, they also rejected the deal back then when I wanted to fund it initially because they were very conservative. And now they were all over it. So they basically refinanced it. They offered me 25-year amortization, 4.25 interest rate for 5 years fixed, no prepayment penalty. And of course, it's a recourse loan for now because it's, you know, I'm probably going to hold it for a year or so, and then we can look into doing the agency. And what they offered me, they asked me, how much do you want the loan to be? And I said, I want the loan to be, you know, 1.5 million, 1.52. So that means I pull all my money out plus 100 grand because I thought it's going to appraise somewhere about 2.1 million. And in the end, it appraised at 2.4 million. Which I'm glad because in a year time, if I go and I get 70% from agency, I'm going to be able to pull out maybe another 250, 300 grand out of this machine. And then we are going to machine. It's a cash flow machine.
I love that analogy. Then,
yes. And then we are going to stretch the amortization for 30 years with lower interest rate. Hopefully we can be under 4. And we are going to be in a position that it's the same monthly payments that will basically will not affect the cash flow. And so that is the plan. And I'm very excited about it. So I refied all my money out plus 100 and something thousand. And it's cash flowing the same as it was prior to that. And that's the deal.
Congratulations on that, Hadar. And I think the biggest thing I wanted to say is, not only did you look at the numbers to pick a market, but you social proofed not only an entire market, but vendors, people, property management, right? I mean, to be honest, you probably social proofed the residents, which that takes so much time. So if anyone who's just starting out or is looking to crack a new market, it's build that funnel of people and just kind of weed them out of who's doing it, who's not, who's moving, who's shaking, and just really social proof it. Because obviously you can't do everything. So you need those vital A players to execute the business plan, execute what you're doing. Because obviously, you know, as Hadar would preach too, I'm sure, he didn't do everything to make sure that he executed that and had that dream refi. He and his team worked diligently to get that from 30% economic occupancy all the way up to, I'm sure it's 90 plus prime for refi to agency, but it's just that seasoning period. So that takes so much time just to, because it's all relationships. And we always add the cliche of real estate is relationships and long-term, but because you had that, it's not like it was a one and done or I'm dependent on this person. So a lot of that takes a lot of work. So I just want to commend and let everyone know that that's a huge piece.
And I have one question. So you set up the a deposit account and a credit card with Centennial Bank in the beginning. Do you think they would have funded the loan if you had not done that?
Not necessarily. You know, the answer is
they wouldn't have given him interest only. They, because of that, they give him interest only.
Yes. You know, it really depends, but I want to make it clear two things. The first thing is that I was visiting the market regularly, and every time I was coming for 2 weeks, and every time I used to meet up with my commercial lender over there and go on for lunch and everything. So I think it helped a lot, and I want to get to that point, but I want to mention that in general, and Will, you can potentially agree with me on that, everything is fundable if you are able to bring enough money to the table. So they wanted me to bring 12 months P&I reserves, which I have. They wanted me to bring cash to the table, which was $400,000, which was, you know, basically 25% of the purchase price. And it was heavy on the front end in terms of the cash I needed to bring, but I wanted to get the deal done. Because a good deal, you do it once and it pays you forever once it's done properly. And this is the key for that. Since then, by the way, Mike, it's 100% occupied right now. And it is a team sport. It's definitely a team sport. I did not do it on my own, but I am an asset manager and I am have my expectations, which are high expectations for whoever walks with me. I lay the field, I make sure that my team executes on my vision and my roadmap. It's very, very important. Having good teams on the ground and people that respect you as an operator is key. I got my maintenance guy, Eddie, which if you are part of Jake and Gino community, or if you visited our YouTube channel of the MIH Mastermind, you might have seen his videos. My relationship with him, he's not the cheapest in the world, but my relationship with him is very, very good. He keeps an eye on the property. He even talks to residents, and he's very, very helpful. And when I come, I take him and his older, you know, his dad is tugging along, helping him with some of the job. I always take them for lunch. I always give them respect, and we got reasonable respect. And it's the same with my electrician that I subcontract. It's the same with other people that I use, because my property manager manages some of the repositioning. Like they have a very good painter that they use, so I use them. They have a very good plumber that they use with cost effective, so I use them. But what I have, whatever I could cut cost on, for example, HVAC, I got a better deal. Electricity, I got a better deal. Hanging up ceiling fans and doing backsplashes and buying appliances, I got a better deal. Installing those things. Many things I subcontractor. I met with the people face to face when I were there. And all it takes once I project manage it is to use the phone and WhatsApp. WhatsApp is great. I use WhatsApp all the time. I use it to send voice messages. I like to delegate verbally. It's faster than typing. And I do WhatsApp kind of like a FaceTime, video chats. So if there is a question, we make time, and then Eddie could do a video chat with me, and I reviewed, and then it's like I'm there, basically. So it's very, very important to create a good team on the ground for that. Another, please, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to ask a question, so make your point, and I'll ask it after.
Okay, so another very, very important point, guys, and I want to hit home with this. If you are going to operate in a market, in any market, and you want to position yourself that lenders will lend you money when you need it, you need to establish relationship with them. One of the key elements that I have implemented now is I got this 400 grand came back. I put that with Centennial. I refinanced another property, which I bought a triplex. I done the bear strategy on them, which is another whole strategy which I've done. And if you want to read an article, an interesting article on how I did what we call a delay refinance, it's on the MFI Holding website. MFI Holding, Multifamily Investment Holding. So MFI Holding with a G.com website. There's an article about it over there. It's a very good strategy when you do 3 to 4 units. So anyway, I managed to pull $40,000 out of this property because I wanted to make the monthly payments instead. And I took that and I deposited with the bank that refied. One of the banks that did that refinance for me, I actually took that property from conventional lending and put it from 30 years amortization to 20 years amortization, but on much lower interest rate, specifically with this community bank. Because I want a relationship with them. I know the banker, I know him for like 2 or 3 years. They're also one of those that didn't fund, you know, the Sherwood Place apartment for me, but I know they fund a lot of deals with multifamily once you have a relationship with them. And the reason I know that is because one of my investor's friend who's been in the industry in my market for 30 years, and he owns about 600 to 700 units free and clear, is banking with them. And I know that they're good for multifamily once you got the relationship. So I made sure I put a deposit with them. And I put a deposit with another bank, the one that refinanced. I sold the property and I made about, I don't know, $60,000 loan proceeds on that. So I put that with another bank. So now I have deposit with 3 banks. And I'm telling you that this relationship is going to be very fruitful when I need to get another loan, if I need a loan because I have an established relationship and all they want is deposits. So it's very, very important. You don't have to put 20, 50 grand, 60 grand, 400 grand. Even if you put 5 or 10 grand, it's fine to start with.
And especially in a changing market environment. So, you know, from 2013 to 2019, it was probably much easier to get a loan as a new borrower in a new relationship. But now if you're a new borrower in a new relationship and you have no deposits, it makes it much more difficult to get a even if you're in state, to get a loan from a bank. But if you've had a 2-year history with them and that they know that you can perform, they know that you've kept a decent level of deposits with them. Now, if you're going to get a loan, you can still get 80%, 75% loan to cost with these banks, even though they're saying no to most other people. But because you have the long-standing relationship, the history, and they know that you will continue to treat them well with deposits, they'll dish out their best terms for you, even in a down environment because of this.
Yes. And I want to mention one more thing is that, first of all, so if any of our listeners here, they want to go and they have a market that they chosen and they want to go and operate in that market, go and meet those community banks through referrals. Make sure you know which one are investor friendly, which one's got appetite to work with, and go and open accounts with them. And put a deposit in. If you could put, let's say $2,000 here, $2,000, start the relationship early. That's number one. Number two I wanted to share is that I did go back to Centennial Will and I told them, I stabilized the asset. Now I have a very good cash flow and I created a lot of equity. Would you restructure the loan? Because you gave me, I appreciate that you funded me. And I wanted to, and when the forbearance and all that came up back in June, May, June, I called one of my asset management role was to keep communicating with my lender. So I came back to them and I told them, hey, we are fine. We're doing fine. We're well capitalized. We're not going to be looking for forbearance or anything like that. So, just to let you know, don't worry about it. We're doing well. So I went back to them and I said, hey, now I want to restructure the loan, not because we are suffering, because I want to give you the chance to fund it, the refi. And he said, no, we can't do it. It just does. It's not something that we do. We can't suddenly assume, if you like, even that there is an appraisal, that the property is going up in value by $1 million. It's just not in the policies of the bank. So that couldn't really happen. And I had to go to the Federal Credit Union, which they're great to work with. They are not regulated exactly like banks, and they could be a little bit more flexible than mainstream community banks.
Well, I think it's important too, because you respected the relationship you had with Centennial, to give them the first at bat, right? Like, hey, it's full transparency, which is a great business practice, right? Instead of, we had Logan Rankin on the podcast. He always communicates to his bank first, financials. So it shows you're on top of your game, right? And then building those relationships with the other banks creates so much flexibility. And I think on the investment side, it's important to have as many different exit strategies as possible in the sense of being able to use them. Because if you pigeonhole yourself in a corner, you might not like the outcome. So it's being as flexible as you can, because you are a steward of your investors' capital. So I think that's a great analogy and just a very practical way of putting your deposits in several different community banks, because in the end, we too have a great relationship with the community bank, and it's because of long tenure experience. And the first at bat's always never the best, but you loan 2, 3, 4, et cetera. That's where you get the true sweat equity and the great relationship.
Yes, and I think it's very important to maintain those relationship. And I actually went back to him and said to him, look, I'm gonna leave the deposits of the rents that coming in. I'm gonna leave it with you. And the reason is mainly because it's convenient to me, because I got all my bill pays and everything and contractors all set up over there, and the system is actually very convenient. So I
leave. No one likes switching banks, so you don't have to justify with us.
Yeah, I know, but it's great. So I leave it with them, and I also asked him and I told him, hey, I'm in acquisition mode now. I got this money came back to me. I'm looking to buy some more asset. I'm in acquisition mode. What's your appetite now due to COVID, due to where the market is? And they came back and he said to me, we will find any deal for you, generally speaking, but we're not going to be as competitive as potentially other lenders. And for me, it's all I wanted to hear. Because once you get the deal, get it stabilized, if you know what you're doing, then you can refi. And we just proved that. So I'm not worried about the terms. I'm not going to go and do hard money loans because, I just don't need it and I don't like it. It's too expensive. But if Community Bank is willing to work with me just to secure the opportunity, even if it's a little bit on the not the most favorable terms, I'll take it.
So we spent a lot of time talking about investing out of market and lending in general. I kind of want to shift gears here a little bit. What are your thoughts on the current environment? Obviously, cap rates have continued to compress. Rents are stagnant, but still relatively strong. What's your overall thoughts of the market and how are you currently looking to invest?
Okay. So My main focus in the last 6 months was risk mitigation, downside protection. And when we were doing underwriting of deals, we were really doing a sensitivity analysis to make sure we can weather the storm. We don't have to go into the weeds of underwriting right now, but that was the focus. One of the main thing was that when we took over the property, actually in January 2020, we gave notice to a handful of residents that rents are going to go up in June by $100 a month. And those people respected the upgrade, the increase, and actually it was implemented. So that was very good. It was existing residents that have been there for many years. But because the notice was given prior to COVID, it was implemented. Since then, we said we're going to put it on hold and we're not going to increase rent apart from unit terms and apart from pretty much unit terms. Now, in January 1st, we already gave them notice before Christmas. I mean, 1st of December, we executed the notice to say that on the 1st of Jan, rents are going up. Those people who are paying $450 to $550. Don't forget, the market rent is $600, but I don't need to do anything to the units. So we lock them in for 18 months leases. So they're going to sign up 18 months. It will mature on June, for example, 2022, sorry. So that's what we implemented. We were focusing on tenant resident retention during COVID. Now, moving forward, you know, nobody could really tell what is going to happen. You know, everybody is crystallizing crystal ball, trying to say a crash, trying to say, I hear economics saying it's just a blip once it's recovered, which it's very, very likely. You know, maybe the next real downturn is around, if you like, strong recession is around 2026. You hear all sorts of different opinions. So the way we look at it, we, like I said, risk mitigation, underwriting conservatively, making sure that you buy right and you got enough meat on the bone in deals. That's just a very, very important factor for us.
Go ahead, Hadar.
I think that apartments are very, very attractive asset class. It's kind of easier to manage than mobile home park or self-storage, which is almost like doing a business. Like self-storage is basically a marketing business as well, if you like. So apartments, it's the second tier above single families, which is the easiest, if you like. Not for us. We believe apartment is the easiest, but the broad approach. So I think apartments proven to be recession resistant, and there is a lot of capital chasing them, a lot of cheap capital and a lot of cash chasing them. So I don't think, if so far we haven't seen a big a crash in the market through COVID, and okay, there was some helicopter money and there was a lot of help, you know, from the government. So we'll see what happened in this first and second quarter of 2021. But I don't think that apartments are going to fall down on their face anytime soon right now, because of the demand and because of the money is very, very cheap. You see, in my view, we are aggressively seeking deals, but we are cautious. In my view, the real downturn, although it could happen if suddenly COVID gets really out of control and suddenly people don't pay and, you know, nobody can predict that. But in my view, it's going to come when interest rates are starting to rise. And that's where perhaps the market will recover in a year or two, and then it's going to keep going up out of control, and then the Fed will put interest rate up, which will slow the market and hurt businesses as well. So in my view, it's potentially going to happen and be related to interest rate, in opposed to just COVID. COVID is just potentially be just a blip on the radar if you look at it in a few years down the track. But I don't know. I'm guessing.
I think it's important too, Hadar. It's the last year or so, even the future, it's kind of having it in phases, right? So it's like these months we're in growth mode, we're increasing rents, then it's retention, then it's expansion, right? So I think it's important to kind of just realize with you and your team of where are we, what can we do to, you know, as an asset manager, keep this asset from just continue to make it hum. And I think it's important too. It's cautiously optimistic. Like you said, the economy is very fragile with everything going on. And I think I agree, like the private equity that we've seen hit the market and just pretty much throw money at multifamily will be there. But like you said, once interest rates rise, that's, I think, when the stress test on valuations and what happens. But as an operator, it's good to see just having that long point of view, but also at the same time, right now with the cards we've dealt, we have to protect this asset. We have to continue to improve and grow and, you know, increase NOI as much as possible and let the market do what it can.
Yes. And I talk to brokers all the time, especially, in certain markets, and a lot of people telling me, oh, the price has already gone down by about 10%. You know, 10% on $5 million property, it's $500,000. On $1 million property, it's 100,000. I mean, that's not really significant because the seller's expectations from the first place were very, very high. So whoever needs to sell will sell, but there is enough capital floating around to take down those deals and still maybe perhaps pay a premium. We're bidding on properties all the time, and you know, more often than not, there's some REIT or some private fund or rich individual from California that just doing a 1031 exchange, and they go and pay way over what we believe it's worth and any local believe it's worth. And, you know, they got different reason to invest. And, you know, as we know, people get tax break from real estate. So, and by the way, that could something that shake the market. If 1031 would be abolished because of Biden, that could potentially affect a demand from some players, you know, or maybe the bonus depreciation. And there's many, many angles and reason for other people to go and pay a premium for a property, which is saving on taxes. A lot of syndicators are collecting fees, which, you know, maybe they are less focused on how good is the deal. They are quite happy to pay their investment 3 or 4% cash on cash return because they're only getting 1% in the bank. So it's very, very important to keep that in mind.
That's why you're focused on the cash flow machine, right?
Yes.
It may be positive or negative, but I think it's a very exciting time to be in real estate just because you can no longer just accept the fact that the value is going to keep continuing to increase at the same speed. Whereas if you bought in 2016, 17, 18, Everyone in the world, not everyone in the world, but 99% of people, like, it's multifamily. The value is going to go up. Like, someone's going to buy it from you at a higher price. Now there's so many more things that you have to be aware of. Interest rates, potential of increasing expenses, what's going to happen to the future of rent collections and rent growth. What's the different political changes going to mean? So it's, I think now we're going to be in a time where the boys are separated from the men, and you can no longer just kind of casually be involved in commercial real estate. You have to really know what you're doing and be very prepared. So it's, to me, it's exciting because it increases the odds a bit.
Absolutely. It's very exciting.
Well, the market has, I think, carried a lot of, and that's where I think too, where Hadar and our team will stick out is, the good operators will overcome it, but then the people who haven't and had the market carry them that false, like, positive of it working, it'll be a very harsh reality they're facing of, oh man, I couldn't just, buy a deal, flip it the next year and, continue that trend. So, and I think too, like Hadar said, the fees and stuff like that, it'll get more, we'll see, but I think too, they'll get weeded out as well because it's the transactions might differ.
Yes, I'm in this business to build generational wealth, passive income. That's why I'm in this business to do. I'm not in the business personally to flip multifamily. You know, I actually, in New Zealand, because I've been doing it for nearly 20 years, I'm still flipping houses because I started as a wholesaler and I have a funnel that generate leads, and I have team on the ground that does it. So it doesn't really, I'm involved with that, but it's not as hard for me as when it is when I was started with it. So I know what flipping, and I know when you want to get, or if you like, when you can't control your delayed gratification. But for me now, it's a long-term goal. I personally not interested to go and compete with markets like Dallas-Fort Worth. I wish I was there 7-8 years ago, you know, when you can buy maybe a 6 or 7 cup off the card, maybe 10-15 years ago. But at this point, I'm happy with steady as she goes, linear markets. When I can get in, force appreciation, $1 million in a year is not bad. I'm sorry. And then increase cash flow significantly. That's what I'm looking for. And that's what I'm being focused on. So it's very important for people to know as well, what's the niche, what's the goal, what's their plan to build their portfolio and generational wealth.
Perfect. So it's been a great chat here. We're coming up close to our time, Hadar. I greatly appreciate you coming on. And before we go to our pro tip, let's take a moment to hear from our sponsor.
And we're back. So Hadar, a lot of gold nuggets this episode, but what is your one investor pro tip you can leave our listeners with us?
Well, my investor pro tip is actually called the 5 elements of successful business. So, you know, I believe that there are a few elements to make you successful, and I would like to touch on those briefly. The first element is focus. I learned over the years that one needs to avoid the shiny object syndrome. Become an expert in what you do, nail it down, and then perhaps once you do that, you can deviate and learn other things. So become an expert in your niche. And I learned it from my own experience. The second element is measurable action plan. One needs to have a measurable action plans and goals, needs to have key performance indicators to track how they perform and how they actually progress within the, if you like, the quarterly action plan. That's what we teach. And really important to measure those, to make sure that you're on track. Number three, something that I learned very, very greatly, specifically since I joined Jake and Gino, you know, seeing how especially Jake, how he's measuring things and working with this sheet that everybody knows. Mark, you know, this sheet, Jake's sheet.
Hadar, that's not what we want our listeners. We're trying to get rid of the sheet.
No, I like the sheet. Proper time management, monthly calendar and weekly planner. Very important. If you're able to focus on the valuable things in your business, if you like the A-level activities, you need to learn to delegate some of them to an assistant, which I'm grateful to. Earlier this year, I got a virtual assistant that really, really took a lot of my plate, and I'm able to focus on the A-level activities, the most productive activities, and also the activities that I enjoy. Number four, quickly, understanding your finances. What can you afford? You need to talk to Will Coleman. You need to talk to a mortgage broker or someone else with your community to figure out what asset you're able to afford to buy if you want to get into this business. Are you able to use a self-directed IRA or EQRP or 401k? Find out what you can afford. Number five, and last but not least, accountability. Accountability, like Jake and Gino, we have great accountability pods in Jake and Gino. We got coaches. We make sure that you are accountable and that you actually execute on what you need to progress with your success. Accountability is the glue that ties commitment to results. Remember that. Accountability is the glue that ties commitments to results. Without accountability, people want to do, they think they want to do, they wrote it down, whatever, but they're not doing it because they're not kept accountable. They're dragging it along. So those five elements, that's my pro tip.
The best pro tip we've ever had, right there.
This is the first time I ever took notes on a pro tip.
I wrote it down as well. So I would just recommend anyone listening to look up Hadar again, his website for his company. I realize I misspoke at the very beginning of the podcast. Yes. So I apologize. MFIholdings.com. Hadar also does a mastermind group, and Hadar has been a huge influence on my career and my personal development. So thank you, Hadar. I'm very, very grateful for having met you. You can check out his mastermind at mihmastermind.com. You can see the picture there behind him. But But Hadar, if anyone did have questions and wanted to reach out to you, what's the best way to reach you?
Yeah, great. So you can really find me on Jake and Gino's. If you're a member of Jake and Gino, you just hit me up with a private message. No worries. You can find me on the MIH Mastermind website through the Contact Us page. I get those messages there. Or you can ring me on my US mobile, which is go straight to my cell phone wherever I am in the world. It's 501-251-8201. And just make sure you make it happen. There's a new year is coming and we have to hit the ground running.
I think that investor pro tip was by far like the perfect time with coming into the new year. So just making sure everyone's clear, they're focused. And, you know, I love the glue. Accountability is a glue to tie commitment to results. I think that really resonates of reflecting this year and then just executing next year. So thank you so much, Hadar, for being on the podcast. And please reach out to Hadar. He's an absolute rock star, and he truly cares about you and your success. So, but you got to make it happen yourself. So reach out to Hadar, and if you have questions for us, please reach out to us at info@randcre.com. And until then, we'll see you next week.